The following podcast is brought to you by the Jonas Podcasting Network, found exclusively at WrestlingWithJonas.com. Hello, and welcome to another live episode of Wrestling with Jonas, episode 323, getting ever closer to our five-year anniversary as well, and for a Monday evening, Monday daytime where my guest is, I'll introduce him in a second, sports broadcaster, former WWE announcer, and stand-up comedian, Johnny LaQuasto. Johnny, great to have you on the show. How you doing?
Man, I'm excited. Congratulations on 5 years. And look at us, just a couple of Johnners just hanging out, man.
You know? Absolutely, absolutely. Well, where are we speaking to you from today, Johnny?
I'm in California. So I am you're eight hours in the future. So tell me what that's like. Yeah.
So it's noon over where you are. So you've not even had your dinner yet, your lunchtime, your sandwich or anything like that. But
I just started my morning coffee, I'm not going to lie.
But you're a busy guy. And we will get into it. We're going to talk about your 13-year career as a sports broadcaster, your stint with the WWE. Can't wait to talk all about that. Your love for pro wrestling and all combat sports and everything in between. And of course, about your recent comedy show that's launched on your YouTube channel very successfully, I might add. We'll talk about the numbers very, very soon. But some recent guests, just to extra entice people to hit like and subscribe to my YouTube channel. I've recently had Michael Oku, the current Rev Pro British heavyweight, undisputed heavyweight champion, no less, on this show about a month ago. One of my recent live conversations with Kamikaze from Canada, of course. He's been doing a bit of tour over here in the UK since about April, but the crazy mofo joined me on this show a couple of weeks ago. Really fun conversation about his time training with the Hearts, training with Lance Storm, training with Roddy Piper. My most recent live conversation last week, as a matter of fact, was with Jordan Sparks, fresh off of 3 months training over in the States with Dr. Tom Pritchard over at JPWA. And some really fun stories, a really exciting young British talent to keep your eye on for the future. And my next live interview, in fact, in just 2 days' time, former WWE NXT UK star, Shah Samuels, 20 years in the business. What this man hasn't done on the UK independent scene isn't worth talking about, but we'll be speaking to Shah live on the show, 8 o'clock UK time in just 2 days' time. Today, it's all about this guy here. And there we go, Johnny LaQuasto. And of course, primarily, we have you on the show today to talk about Saudi stepdad. Now, for many of my UK followers that might not know what Saudi stepdad is, right. It's your latest comedy routine, isn't it? Your latest comedy show that's recently dropped on YouTube. Give us a brief synopsis about what the show is all about and kind of the thought process behind it as well.
Yeah, first off, I want to say what's awesome about what you do is the fact that you give a platform to so many different people, a lot of up and comers or a lot or veterans, and that's the cool thing about, like, I'll be honest with you, I haven't done wrestling podcasts since the pandemic and since being released, and I've honestly never even posted. I never did my typical, hey, I'm available for bookings post, because at the time we're at the heat of the pandemic. And, you know, I thought that was a time for the wrestlers to be posting about stuff, not the broadcasting side of it. So I love what you do. Cause I mean, it's, there's so much wrestling out there and there are so many people that, you know, deserve to have a little bit of a rub. And I love the fact that you're staying so active, 5 years running. Oh, yeah. So, you know, once again, congratulations on that. But as far as if people don't know who I am, I completely understand that. I was with WWE for a full year, and I really loved every single second of it. I did everything possible with a microphone for that company in a year. Unfortunately, the pandemic did cut it short, like it did for a lot of people in April of 2020. And so I've been a stand-up comic for 17 years. So stand-up was really my first foray into, like, you know, performing, if you will. And then that led to a hosting opportunity a couple of years later. And then I started doing on-camera hosting. And then to 2010, I got contacted by David Marquez, who runs the United Wrestling Network. And many people in the UK watch Championship Wrestling from Hollywood, which just became Championship Wrestling. So he gave me an opportunity. He said, hey, I need someone to do interviews. I can't promise it's going to lead to anything. And I said, well, that's all I need. I never thought I'd have a chance to work in wrestling. So I did. And I did everything possible for United over the next 9 years. You know, my first ever interview was with Scrap Iron Adam Pearce when he was the NWA World's wow. Heavyweight Champion, you know? And so we became very close. And over the years, you know, my goal was, I honestly never expected to work for WWE. I truly didn't. I knew I had the ability. I knew I had the talent and the work ethic. But on the broadcasting side of things, it's hard enough to make it there as a wrestler. As a broadcaster, look at how few broadcasting spots there are with that company. So, Johnners, I'll be honest, I really didn't ever have that anticipation. My goal was, if I'm on camera, if I'm calling stuff, I'm going to be as good as I possibly can be just to do respect for the business. That's what I really wanted. And it just so happens that, you know, I did a little ring announcing, did a bunch of interviews, and then started doing play-by-play and color, a mix of both, over the past like 7-8 years, something like that. And, you know, you make enough relationships over the years, it led to WWE. But I never stopped doing stand-up. I did for a couple of years because the pandemic took it away for all of us. It took all kinds of payment away for, you know, did a couple of Zoom shows here and there, but that doesn't count. That's just, you're talking into a void and you're hoping people are, you know, happy enough.
You're not getting that interaction, are you?
No, not at all. Occasionally someone will put their microphone on and they're like brushing their teeth and you hear the noise. The Zoom shows were the worst. And so I never stopped doing stand-up. I had about a 2-year layoff. My full year with WWE, I focused solely on that. I stepped away from stand-up and I was happy to do so. And then, of course, the pandemic. So, you know, my first special, I actually shot it in 2018. But right when I was getting ready to release it, I got hired. And so I said, you know what? I'm going to shelf the special because I don't want any kind of distractions. I want them to know that this is my priority. And so I ended up not releasing the special I shot until about almost 3 years later. I released it in June of 2021. Well, then after I, you know, got released and the pandemic happened, my life did a complete 180 to where I went from being, you know, single, living the adult child life, fully focused on my career and nothing else, just tunnel vision. I met this amazing woman and we ended up, you know, we got married and now I have 3 stepkids. And life has done a complete 180, to say the least. And she also happens to be, her and the kids are from Saudi Arabia originally. They've been in the States for a long time now, but they're from Saudi Arabia. And as I started kind of diving back into stand-up a little bit, as things started to open up, she actually convinced me. She said, you need to do another special because your other special is nothing like the way you are now. You need to do something. And so I just started I started writing as much as I could, performing as much as I could, and kind of put it all together. And I kind of went the route that a lot of comics are doing now. Instead of relying like we did a decade ago, hoping Comedy Central, you know, put us on or waiting on Netflix. Netflix picks and chooses who they want. And let's be honest, they go with a lot of celebrity comics and more power to them. But a lot of comics have changed the game to where they're putting out specials on their own on YouTube. I mean, Andrew Scholes, I think, is at 17 million views. Matt Rife is over 15 million views. So many other, I'm trying to think of other comics that have just blown up YouTube with their specials to where now you can do that. That's an avenue. And so I did everything DIY. I had a great team, really small team, but a great team on board. And, we shot it in June, went into the editing process. I sat right there with, my friend who was editing and we decided to put it out September 26th. And so I called it Saudi Stepdad because that's essentially my life now. A lot of people, they see the thumbnail and they see the title and they see my face. They're like, well, that's an interesting title. It gets a lot of second looks and justifiably so. But yeah, I really feel like there's no comedy special out there like it. And, you know, I have a bit about wrestling. I have a bit about working in MMA. And then the rest of it is just about my life over the past 4 years to where it kind of starts me moving across the country to work my dream job. To where a year later it all gets taken away, but then in actuality it leads to me gaining so much more. And so I feel like it's got a great message, and I think that anyone who watches it can really enjoy it. I truly believe it's an awesome comedy special that would give you a lot of laughs, and I'm really proud of it.
Absolutely. And I've seen it twice over the last couple of days in preparation for this, the second time because I enjoyed it so much the first time. And it's doing some great numbers. I think it's only been out 12 days. It's recently just ticked over 33,000 views. 22,000 of those was in the first 24 hours, Johnny. So I think you're onto a winner here, my friend. But like I say, a lot of people have seen it. You've had some good feedback from me, especially. But what's the general feedback been? What's the general vibe been from the people that have watched it? Friends, family, fans? Tell us about it.
It's been an overwhelmingly positive, which I really do appreciate. You know, it's gotten a lot of Arabic viewers because, you know, we did a live virtual premiere. Mm. And, you know, my wife happens to have a very big following in the Middle East. She's got a following of close to 2 million. And so, you know, with her being so involved in the special, it's really gotten a lot of global views. So now my goal is, as far as like promoting it, I'm trying to get, you know, I want to get more English speaking people to watch the special, UK, Canada, US. That's the goal. Because I want it to be as, you know, I want it to be as viewed around the world as I possibly can. But no, the feedback's been really good, especially from people who I haven't spoken to in years, who some didn't even know I was with WWE. Some had no clue that I was in a relationship or had a family. So for people to watch it, they said, you know, they really enjoyed the story that it told from beginning to end. And the most common comment I've gotten is like, damn, dude, like, I had no idea that this is your life now. I was like, yeah, it is. And it's hectic. And I do my best to balance it, but it's pretty awesome.
We're going to show a couple of clips from the comedy special that's available on YouTube. And we're going to tell you exactly where you can go to watch that very, very soon. But here's the first clip, just to give you a little bit of a flavor of Johnny Loquasto's comedy special.
But having an Arab wife is pretty awesome because I don't have a boring nickname like Babe. Nah, my nickname is Habibi. I love being a Habibi. Just sounds like I should have chest hair flowing out of my unbuttoned shirt. Ooh. And I know what kind of mood my wife is in, depending on how she says Habibi. If she's happy, she goes, Habibi. If she's pissed at me, she says, white person. I'm like, right. 100% true.
Absolutely. And like I said, that's just one of the many, like I say, it's 45 minutes long. So we'll break it all down very, very soon. But we spoke about kind of what sort of feedback you're getting from your family, friends and followers. What sort of feedback have you received from your wife, especially because a lot of the comedy routine and the set is based around your relationship with your wonderful wife and new stepchildren. What's her feedback been?
I mean, she's funnier than I am. So she's been on board the entire time. I mean, she had seen essentially all the material prior to filming it. The weekend, actually, I shot on a Sunday night. The Friday and Saturday before, I had four shows where I was doing about 25 minutes each show. So I was really, it was a great opportunity to run everything before I actually filmed it. It gave me a lot of confidence. So she had seen everything, but also like I will run jokes by her, like all the jokes where I'm talking in Arabic. You know, we did two tapings. The first taping went amazing, except I really rushed the parts with the Arabic and I didn't quite say it right. So in between shows, she was actually coaching me. She said, no, on the second show, say it this way and take your time and be slower with it. And that's what we did. And so any of the parts where I'm speaking Arabic, we actually use from the second show because she actually like helped me say it correctly. But I'll be honest, I truly, she's funnier than me. I mean, one of the reasons she has such a big following is her sense of humor, and neither one of us take each other, like, we don't take ourselves seriously. I mean, look, we're from different parts of the world, but I think us being together is just, it's a great message. Like love conquers everything, all types of differences, you know? And So we have to laugh at ourselves. So yeah, like when she, if I'm annoying her with something, she's like, listen, white person. I'm like, okay, you got my attention now. What? You know what I mean? Like, and so I'm slowly learning Arabic one word at a time. Like we film videos together where like she's trying to teach me Arabic and almost always, this is not even me trying, I will mess something up horrifically to where it makes me sound absolutely ridiculous. But you know, that's what life is for. You got to laugh. And so she played a huge part in creating the special and the material, me running stuff by her to see if it made sense. And so, yeah, I'm grateful for that.
Let me ask you, at the very top of the comedy special, before we see you go out on stage, you're backstage with your lovely wife, and she appears to do something around your head, maybe a couple of air kisses, and then she says that she is protecting you from devil eyes. Mm-hmm. Did you ever find out what she meant by that?
Oh, I do. That was actually an idea we came up with where, because basically the way it is now with, I love introductions to comedy specials, like I am a nerd for extra. Like my album from 2017 is a full-on concept album that has 32 tracks, that has fake commercials, an intro, an outro. It ends with me doing the Vincent Price laugh from Thriller. I mean, just, I love extra. But And my first special has a 4-minute introduction sketch leading up to me going on stage. But, you know, times change to where the internet has no attention span, like I say in the very first line of my special. You know, analytics show if you're not hitting that stage quick, people might tune out. So I said, well, we got to do something to establish us. And I said, you know, what about where you're kind of spitting on my face? It's kind of like a good luck thing in a way. It's, right. it's a way of protecting you from. So devil eyes is kind of the same thing as like envy. It's a kind of a religious thing to where a lot of people, if there's envy, they might not even try to envy you, but if they do, that can cause damage to you. So this is something that you can do to protect you from envy. So she was doing that to protect me from envy / devil eyes before I ran out on the stage. But of course we did it in a funny way to where I'm like, hey, what are you doing there? Even though we do it to each other all the time. But I was like, that's the perfect quick little 20-second introduction because people get to see her, all her fans get to see her and get excited. They see us together and it sets the tone. But then for people watching who don't understand it, they're like, huh, this is a real cultural gap between the two. This is going to be something. And that's kind of, to me, that little 20 seconds brings it all together, I think. But yeah, good yeah. question, because I know it is interesting. Yeah,
absolutely. And you recorded it from the rec room, Huntington Beach in California, didn't you? And looks like the fans in attendance for that taping, they really seem to be into the whole set, laughing at all the jokes, which I suppose for a comedian is a massive relief when you get laughter to your jokes and to your set. You know, that sort of material, I don't think you were playing before a wrestling audience, where you were wrestling fans in particular. Did a lot of the jokes seem to go over the top of their head at all?
There were definitely some wrestling fans in attendance. Right. I want to say there were probably a few more in the last special I shot, but the last special I shot, I was in front of 300 to 400 people for each taping. I wanted this room to be much smaller and more intimate because I changed so much as a person and as a comic over the past 4.5-5 years. I wanted this to be more like a living room type environment. I mean, it's still a pretty big room. You could still jam 130 people in there, but I just wanted it to be a lot more intimate and a lot more conversational. And I really think we kind of like nailed that. But yeah, there weren't a lot of wrestling fans, I would say, in either crowd. Cause I would look, anyone who wanted to come, I wanted them to be there. And some of them happened to be wrestling fans, but most people were just comedy fans. But at the same time, it was important for me to get a joke in about, you know, defending professional wrestling. And it was important for me to get a joke in about my life as a combat sports broadcaster, because those are two such big parts of my life. And I had to tell that story. And I couldn't tell the story without mentioning up front, like, hey, 4 years ago, I moved across the country as my dream job, you know, as a broadcaster with WWE. And then, of course, people start applauding. I'm like, yeah, I lost it. But anyways, like, because, you know, if that didn't happen, I wouldn't have the special. I wouldn't be telling this story. So my thing is honesty as a comic is so important. I think honesty as a broadcaster is important. If you're not authentic with your audience, you're not going to grow as a person and they're going to tune out. You have to be completely honest with people. And so that's kind of how my mindset was.
Yeah, let's watch our second clip, which perfectly explains what you're on about your years in the wrestling business and the reaction that you get from people in the street.
Here. Love doing play-by-play. I'm very proud of it. I've worked in professional wrestling for 13 years. And, you know, when it's done right, pro wrestling is the greatest form of live entertainment on the planet, you know. But when you tell another adult that you work in professional wrestling, a normie, every single response is always, oh, you work in wrestling? You know it's fake, right? So's The Bachelor. Shut up. What's your point? You know? Everything is fake. You know the Pirates of the Caribbean movies? They're not real pirates. In real life, Captain Jack Sparrow's wife pooped in his bed. And he had to take her to court to get revenge. So let us enjoy our stories.
Man, I love that bit.
Once again, that's another joke heavily inspired by my wife, because she was enthralled by the Johnny Depp, Amber Heard.
Amber Heard, same. Yeah, which absolutely.
I couldn't have cared less. I wasn't paying any attention to it. She would just offer me this information. And I'll never forget one day she goes, did you know she pooped in his bed. I was like, what? And she told me about it. I was like, you got to be freaking kidding me. And so, like, I had a joke on my last special about professional wrestling, which, and you know, luckily it's done really well on like Instagram. I recently reposted it and everything where I'm defending wrestling. It's a bit of a longer bit, but I was like, well, I still need to do it for this one, because now when I shot that special, I had not done WWE. I hadn't done a lot of stuff overseas. Now I have, to where it's like, in my opinion, I'm carrying a flag for pro wrestling every time I step in front of a microphone, whether it's comedy, whether it's broadcasting, whatever. So she helped me because she told me about the Johnny Depp Amber Heard trial. She essentially helped me write that punchline, because I honestly may not have even known, because I just don't pay attention to that stuff. But she loved it, and it was very entertaining.
Absolutely. I think this was your first comedy special that you were referring to a moment ago, filmed in 2018, released 2020 or 2021, but still available, still out there. And there we go. I think it's available on various streaming platforms.
Yeah.
But if I'm not mistaken, maybe earlier on this year, did you do a comedy tour with WWE Hall of Famer Rikishi?
Well, that was actually in the spring of 2019.
Ah, okay. Got some pictures here. But yeah, tell us a bit about that. How did that all come about?
As you can see, way before I had facial hair. So
yeah,
yeah, it's just crazy how, like, man, I always say all the time, like, if I never do another thing in pro wrestling, I've already been given more than I ever could have anticipated. You know, from just saying yes to doing interviews on NWA Championship Wrestling from Hollywood in 2010 to what I've been able to do. Now, don't get me wrong, I've worked relentlessly, but at the same time, you know, the saying in wrestling is wrestling doesn't owe you anything, you know? And so many things have happened to where, like, I look back on it, I'm like, how the hell did that happen? And so what happened was, I was reached out to by Rikishi's agent at the time, right? And he reached out and said, hey, Rikishi wants to do essentially a storytelling tour, kind of in the vein of the way Mick Foley had reached so much success. And I know he's done shows in the UK, and I love Mick. One of the, he truly is one of the greatest human beings. I mean, I can't believe he's nicer than even I can explain. Like, I'll never forget a little over a year ago, I was calling play-by-play for the first wrestling showcase for the Premier Streaming Network, which is like a new streaming network that, they're really growing. It's co-owned by Freddie Prinze Jr. now, which is really great. They're doing tons for pro wrestling and combat sports.
We've got some companies over here in the UK that use the same streaming platform, yeah?
Yeah, I'm very close with them, and I speak very highly. They're awesome to work with, right? And so I called the first ever wrestling showcase where Matt Cardona won the championship at the end. And, you know, I'm back in the locker room area, I guess you could say. And I had my back turned. I was working on my notes, and I hear, oh, hey, Johnny. I turn around, and it's Mick. And I was blown away. Like, look, Mick and I have worked together a few times. I've even opened for him on his comedy show. But never in my wildest dreams would I think Mick would see me and recognize me and say hi to me. Because to me, he's Mick Foley. Who am I? And that just goes to show the kind of person that he is. I mean, now granted, when I was calling 205 Live, his son was the head writer. So obviously, I'm sure he was watching. So maybe that's why. But at the same time, I was just blown away that someone like Mick Foley would actually see me and remember my name. Oh, hey, Johnny. I'm like, oh, hi, Mick. Like, it just blew my mind. And so, so this agent reached out to me and said, hey, Rikishi wants to do a tour, and everyone keeps bringing your name up as this is the guy that should do it with Rikishi. And so, you know, Rikishi and I reached out to each other. He lived in LA. I lived in LA. We met up at Knox Pro a couple of times. We kind of kicked around ideas. And to be honest, I already had an idea. I said, here's the idea. You and I do a two-man show. I open the crowd for a good 20 minutes, 25 minutes, whatever. I give you a grand introduction with your music, whatever, whatever. And then you have your stories ready. So him and I kind of structured the shows together before we ever did a show. And then he said to me, I said, hey, you know, I think I'd be more comfortable if you stay on stage during my set. I said, all right, cool. I said, how about this? I will put a stool in the back possible corner of the stage. So you have the entire stage, except I'm just back there with a microphone. And he's like, that way you can keep me on track. You could riff with me. We could have some fun. And that's what we did. And unfortunately, we only did 4 dates, but we had so much fun together. And I remember it was late March. We finished our 4th show together. And not only did he say I was officially part of the Samoan family. I appreciated that. He called me one day, and I'm not kidding. I was offered my WWE job like the day before or something. And he called me and said, hey, Johnny, he's like, I want to talk about, like, let's come up with some ideas to do some new dates. And I said, Keish, I would love to do that. I said, but I'm not supposed to say anything, but I kind of just got a job. And he paused for a second, and all I hear is, I knew it, brother. I knew it was going to happen for you, brother. And so, we are still buddies. I try to stay in contact with him as much as possible. Knox Pro's doing great. And if you look at that family tree, my goodness, his two sons are just unbelievable. And not to mention Solo, three sons, I should say, just 100%. Unbelievable. And I'm sure he is a very, very proud dad. And I'm looking forward to seeing him get involved somehow in this story. But love work for Rikishi. It was an honor, man. Such a great guy.
Absolutely. I'm interested to know about the art form of comedy and stand-up comedy in particular. Tell us a bit about the art form as far as you're concerned and what made you fall in love with comedy and kind of how you see stand-up comedy as an art form in your own head.
For me, I grew up as a fat kid. I got, I was about 160, 165 pounds when I was in sixth grade. So for me, and this is the early 90s when, you know, no one really cared about bullying. You just got bullied and you dealt with it. You know, fortunately there was no internet at the time. So you got bullied in school. Guess what? You leave school, you don't have to get bullied again until the next day. So for me, I just developed a sense of humor to kind of, I don't know if it defend myself in a way or just like kind of deflect. Anyone who had an awkward childhood had to come up with some kind of defense mechanism, and humor was mine. And so I just became kind of like an outgoing personality. And then the show that really hit me was In Living Color. When that came out, it just hit me at the right time. There had never been a show like it on television. To this day, I still say it's underrated. I still say it's underappreciated. You look at the amount of superstars that have catapulted from In Living Color. I mean, Jim Carrey, Jamie Foxx, David Alan Grier, all the Wayanses, Tommy Davidson. It just, the list goes on and on. That show just, it warped my sense of humor as a little kid. Because also, let's be honest, there weren't many urban comedy shows on television at the time either. And Living Color was a trend-setting show in so many ways. And I just loved it because to me, In Living Color was like comedy for the underdog. And that's what I think comedy is. I think comedy is meant for the underdogs, you know? And so for me, I always make sure, like, it's just for me to write, when I write my jokes or when I write material, it's always coming back on me. The punchline, if it's gotta be self-deprecating. I don't like punching down. I think punching down, it can work sometimes, but for the most part, it really doesn't. Sometimes you have a punchline that might look like it's doing that. Well, then I got to find a way to bring it back onto me, you know, to make me look like the butt of the joke. And so to me, comedy is really like, it's really the underdog. I feel like that way is with music a lot of times too. And that's why I think a lot of times you see comedians, they get incredibly famous and people wonder, well, like, I don't know, why are their specials not any good anymore? It's because they're not struggling. There's no struggle anymore. You've reached the peak. You've reached your level of success. You have as much money as you'll ever need. So what are you going to talk about? So for me, I think there's always got to be a hunger. There's always got to be some kind of neuroticism. Yeah. That you have. And luckily for me, I got plenty of neuroses. So I think it helps with, so for me, I think that's kind of the way that for me, that's kind of the way I look at stand-up comedy. It's the underdog mindset. It's trying to see if your views will make sense to other people. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't.
And like I say, huge success. Saudi Stepdad has had 33,000 views. It seems to be going up another 1,000 by the day.
Trying to get it even bigger, man.
It's doing well. It's doing well. I mean, like I say, it hit 22,000 within the first 24 hours. I'm sure when you woke up after day one and saw them sort of figures, you must have been doing cartwheels.
Well, I can't do cartwheels. I'm not a good athlete. But mental cartwheels, yeah, man, because it's terrifying when you put something out there. I mean, you know what it's like. You do it on a weekly basis. Yeah. You put a product out there, you worry. You do worry. You're like, oh, what if I say this wrong? Or what if I don't do this correctly? Or, you know, a project like this, you're putting thousands of dollars into it. You're putting all this effort into it. And you're kind of like bearing your soul to people. I mean, this is my life now. I'm talking about my wife. I'm talking about my kids. I'm talking about my family. And it's hard enough when you're a blended family as is. When you're a blended family from different cultures, you have to deal with it on both sides. As much as I would love to say that the world is rosy and people just accept everyone, you and I know that's not a fact. It's just not true. And I know there's plenty of people that talk about us who might not say it to our face, or there's stuff the kind of shit we deal with on social media. It's ridiculous. I mean, 80% of people are very supportive, but there's a small percentage that are just hateful. I mean, we're hitting that block button all the time. Yeah. And so you have all those thoughts before you release something like this, especially for her. She's not a stand-up comedian. She's very funny and she has a character that's very popular online. And plus she's also a very motivating person. She's an artist. I mean, but for me to release a special saying, hey, this is me, this is her, this is us as a family, that was a big step. And I was thinking about so many different things. And so when that first morning hit after it was released and I saw the numbers, it was a big sigh of relief. Cause you know, a lot of comics are releasing specials on YouTube and a lot of them don't go anywhere. And so I was worried too. I'm like, you just don't know. I'm like, man, I hope people tune in. I hope people watch. I hope people enjoy it. And luckily it's so far it's working out.
And with the success of Saudi Stepdad so far, any plans to do another comedy special? And if so, what do you think the topics might consist of?
Well, the funny thing is I have another one coming out, but it's not solo. It's with a company called Dry Bar. So Dry Bar is a comedy that releases strictly squeaky clean comedy specials. I actually shot it with them exactly a year ago yesterday. And they just told me that it's going to be released on their app this Thursday. As far as when will it be on YouTube for the world, probably months down the road. So that one is coming out. But as far as another one, I don't know. There's a couple ideas. I would kind of like to do one where it's literally just me off the top of my head having fun with the audience without any planned material. Like I would really love to do one like that because I love crowd work. I don't force crowd work. I let crowd work happen naturally, but I would love to do a special like that.
Yeah.
And I think I hear my dog howling right now.
That's all right. My dogs would probably get involved. They like to kind of get involved with these shows. But just a few pictures of you at previous shows.
Oh,
probably
so old.
Going back a few years here.
Yeah, we are.
I love the t-shirt on that one. We're all going to bring it up again with Captain Lou.
That's right.
Brilliant t-shirt. Probably some more recent shots here. But there we go. A bit of a facial hair. We know that's a more recent one with facial hair for sure.
Yes.
But something else, and I spoke about your wife and the devil eyes at the very top of your comedy special. Another thing at the top of the comedy special for anybody that watches it or part of the 33,000 that have watched it is not only this with a little snippet that you can see on the right hand side of the picture of Indiana Jones, the Big Lebowski, Bobby Heenan and Gorilla Monsoon.
Easter eggs.
And this eerie looking clown. Give us a bit of backstory into some of those cameos and what they call, why you put them into the intro.
Well, for me, I looked at it this way. If I couldn't do a long run-on sketch to lead into my special, as a comic or as any performer, artist, whatever you want to call us, you got to do some stuff for you. So for me, I'm like, I want to throw in some stuff in the beginning of the special that mean a lot to me. So in my first special, like I said, In Living Color means more to me than any show I've ever seen in my life. So in the first special, I had a friend who's an artist. He drew my entire backdrop for my special. And it's basically me leading a parade of a whole bunch of stuff that I love. So it was me leading a parade with a luchador wrestler behind me, with a skeleton, which is supposed to represent the paranormal, to I had Homie the Clown from In Living Color. And I'm not a big collector, but I was able to acquire this Homie the Clown doll a number of years ago. And I actually didn't tell my wife that I was bringing it when we were shooting the special because she's not a big fan of dolls because, you know, dolls can be creepy. Let's be honest.
Yeah. Especially that one. Clowns. Yeah.
Look at it. So I threw it in the car last second and she didn't know it. And so we started setting up for the shot and I put Homie kind of off to the side and she's like, what is that? I'm like, it's going to be part of the special. She's like, no, it's not. I'm like, no, it's going to be, it has to be. And so I was like, all right, what can I do, you know, for things that I love to get them involved, like super quick. And like, you know, people that want to look for little things will see it. So I thought right away, well, I got to have Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby Heenan, as you can see right behind me on the wall.
Yeah.
And also Big Lebowski is one of my favorite movies ever. And I just thought the Indiana Jones scene was really funny. And so I actually had our 12-year-old who's really smart. I mean, he just built a computer a week and a half ago. We went and bought all the stuff and he put it together, which blew my mind. he wanted to mess around with some Photoshop. I was like, well, hey, can you Photoshop me into this Big Lebowski photo and this Indiana Jones photo? And he goes, sure. So he did it. And I said, well, guess what? You're going to be part of the special now. So of course he's in the closing credits as well. So it was kind of a cool way to get like him involved and also the stuff I love involved. I knew the wrestling fans would pop to see Bobby Heenan and Gorilla Monsoon on the mirror. And I knew the comedy fans who love In Living Color would see Homie the Clown and be like, oh, that's awesome. And so for me, those just for me. I mean, Gorilla and Bobby meant so much to me growing up, and In Living Color meant more to me than anything in comedy. So I wanted to put them all together.
Absolutely. And we're going to move on to combat sports and wrestling very soon, I promise you. But just to kind of cover off the comedy special, where can my viewers and listeners watch that? I know that we've got your socials scrolling along the bottom of the screen. We'll go into detail about your socials a bit later. But where can they watch your comedy special directly after watching this, of course?
Yeah, super easy. YouTube.com/Johnny Loquasto, JonnyLoquasto. That's my YouTube page. It'll be right there at the top. And you're going to enjoy it. And if you do like it, click that thumbs up, write a nice little comment, and send it to a few friends. It's free. And the more people that watch, the better it is. I would love to be able to start touring a little bit off this. So we'll see what happens.
Get you over here in the UK.
Oh, man, that'd be a dream.
That'd be good, wouldn't it? That'd be good. We did have somebody reach out to us now, watching us via Facebook. Now, we are live via Twitch, Facebook Live, and YouTube. So if you want to send in questions for Johnny Loquasto, you can do. Just ping them through to us using your chosen device. We'll do our very best during the course of this interview to answer every single question. And we did have a question from somebody watching us live via Facebook. Now, if you are watching us live via Facebook, go to StreamYard.com/Facebook first, and then we'll be able to see your name and your icon picture. So this will come up as just Facebook user, but I've checked, and it's from a viewer, James Richards. And James has asked, Dan, haven't seen Johnny in ages. Used to love watching him with Kathy Kelly on AfterBuzz TV. So how long ago would that have been then, Johnny?
It's funny. Man, AfterBuzz really had a pretty large reach. Kathy and I, we started co-hosting on AfterBuzz together. Oh, I want to say maybe early 2014, something like that. And yeah, we co-hosted together for a number of years until she got her job and then she went on. And then, of course, I ended up also at NXT. So we ended up being colleagues once again.
That's really
for a good amount of time. And then she ended up leaving. I want to say it was shortly before, right around the, actually maybe after the pandemic. I'm not sure, because it was sometime early 2020 when she decided to step away. Cause I remember there was a 2-week run on television where they didn't have anyone to do interviews on TV. And so that's how I ended up being like I went from the digital interviewer backstage to the NXT television interviewer. So I remember I did one with William Regal on TV, and I did one with Keith Lee the week after he won the North American Championship. Did a couple ones. So it was really cool to have a 2-week run. I knew it wasn't going to last long because I knew they preferred to have a woman in that role. And then obviously Mackenzie Mitchell stepped right in, and she's incredible. So, but it was really cool to have those 2 weeks to where, like, you know, I jumped in there. But yeah, Kathy and I, many years, I want to say probably, yeah, about 9 years ago, we started working together. Wow. And AfterBuzz, Maria Menounos and Kevin Undergaro, they gave a great platform to so many hosts over the years. And it's pretty cool to see that many people watched us over the years.
Absolutely. And we mentioned that 13 years as a sports broadcaster and play-by-play guy. I'm just going to bring up some pictures here because I think a lot of these are from this year. You've been a busy guy. 2023 has been a great year for you, not just around North America, but traveling around as well. Mm-hmm. But tell us a little bit about 2023 in a nutshell, as far as where you've been, what you've been up to, and what sort of fun you've been having.
You had to show Zicky Dice knocking me on my ass, didn't you?
I'll bring up again.
The outlandish one. I'll tell you what. Actually, no. If you don't know Zicky Dice, you should follow him. I'm proud to, I will say, I'll break the fourth wall. I'm proud to call him a friend. We've worked together for many, many years, and he is, he's nonstop entertainment. And I think the world of him as a person and as a performer. So I'm glad to see him. He ventured off on his own. He left Impact, and now he's going all over the place. And so I wish him the best. But yeah, 2023, it's been a little bit of everything. In March, we did a tour with Armed Forces Entertainment called the Ringside Salute Tour, which is a tour I created back in 2015 and 2016, where I went over to visit our troops in the Middle East. with a number of well-known professional wrestlers. So this past March, our tour was myself, Carlito, Scotty Too Hotty, and Scotty put me in contact with you. There you go. D'Lo Brown, Victoria, and Sergeant Chris Melendez. We're already lining up another one for next year. Cannot wait. Although I'm not sure Carlito's going to be available now as of a couple of days ago.
No, it was nice to see him pop up on Saturday evening, wasn't it?
Well deserved. Well deserved.
He looked great as well. Looked awesome.
He's phenomenal. There's nothing he can't do.
Does not age. No. Not a second.
He'll tell you that he does, but no, not at all. And then so we're on that tour, and Armed Forces Entertainment says, well, hey, we would love to do an MMA tour. The two biggest requests from, you know, the American troops stationed overseas is we want wrestling, we want MMA. So I put together an MMA tour because I also work for Titan FC, which, you know, our pay-per-views are on UFC Fight Pass. And the owner of Titan FC is a former Marine. And so it was easy for him, and he's helped some odd 150 fighters get UFC contracts. So it was easy for us to put that tour together. So we did one in August where we, you know, we went all over the place, went to Gitmo, we went to Honduras, trying to think where else. And then they just did a second one where I did not go because I wanted to stay back with my family, but we're already lining up tours for next year. But yeah, I mean, the cool thing about freelancing is you start every week off brand new and you don't quite know what's going to happen. And so for me, I'm available for any company that makes sense. So yes, MMA, boxing, professional wrestling. I just joined the team for United Women. I'm sorry, the Ultimate Women of Wrestling, UWW, where I got to do commentary with the legendary Melina and the legendary Rampage Jackson. There's a trio for you. We just had our first event together where they weren't happy with the play-by-play situation. Melina convinced them to bring me in because Melina and I went on tour together back in 2016 to visit our troops. So we've been friends ever since. And she said, look, trust me, bring Johnny in. He's what we need. And luckily it went great. So we're going to move forward there. And Spark Joshi, Puroresu just brought me on. I have my first event with them coming up this Wednesday in LA and then Saturday in Orlando, where they're doing live pay-per-views on Fight TV. One is called Rising Heat West. One is called Rising Heat East. And they're the first Japanese style, Japanese style women's promotion in the U.S., and so it's going to be a really eclectic group of talent that I'm honored to be calling that as well. And so if you would have told me when 2023 began, hey, are you going to be calling a couple of all women's promotions? I never would have thought that because I didn't, neither one really existed, but they just, things happen and they come about. And, you know, am I ready to be under contract? Absolutely. Can any company toss me on national television this week and be in good hands? Absolutely. Because yeah. I'm staying sharp and I feel like my resume continues to build. Also, having a master's degree in physical therapy, you're not going to find a play-by-play guy who knows more about the body than me. I got a college degree to prove it. On top of that, 16, 17 years of stand-up comedy. All of this blends in to where there are many times in my life I'm like, man, should I just focus on one thing? Because people always say, focus on one thing or else, you know, you got to get pigeonholed in something. But for me, I'm stubborn. I like and love too many things. And that's a message I want to get out to people is like, you can be a professional in more than one thing. If you love more than one thing, that's cool. You can just work your ass off and you can make a living at multiple things and you can live your dream in multiple ways. So some days I'm going to be doing stand-up. Other days I'm going to be doing play-by-play in wrestling or in MMA or in boxing, or I'll be doing ring announcing. Titan has me cage announcing and play-by-play. So like I'm calling a fight and then I'm running into the cage, making the announcement, running back.
That is versatility and stamina as well.
Look, I'll have it no other way.
And a good pair of sneakers. Yeah,
exactly. And dude, I'll have it no other way, man. I want to stay busy. And you know, the hunger is always there. Like, do I feel like I had a lot of unfinished business when I lost my job? Absolutely. But I also know it wasn't performance-based. The world changed and none of us saw a pandemic coming. And we all just had to figure out our way. And I'm even better now than I was 3 years ago. There's no doubt about it. And what will the future hold? I don't know. Maybe I'll receive an opportunity with a company on national television. Yeah, but if it doesn't happen, that's fine because I'm going to keep on pushing. And any company who works with me is going to get the best possible broadcast. That's the way I look at it.
Absolutely. Just going to bring up this picture. And it's from a recent tweet Yep. Yourself and Carlito enjoying an Egyptian sugarcane juice. Uh-huh. I'm sure that's all the energy, all the fiber you need for a day's work. But
delicious.
Something else looking ahead and just a couple of months around the corner, something to get really excited about is yourself. You're going to be part of the
Cruise. I forgot. Yes.
Here we go. 2024 is kicking off with a bang and you're going to be there January the 26th through to the 30th. Miami to Mexico on the Jericho Cruise. JerichoCruise.com is where you need to be heading to get your tickets now, to get your chalets now, your cabins now. But you're not there in a play-by-play capacity. You're going to be there as a comedian doing your stand-up routine. Tell us about that, because that must be a huge thrill for you to have that opportunity in the first place.
Oh, big time. I mean, look, it's one of those things where I kind of had the opportunity over the last couple of years. But for me, I've always been very specific about keeping my wrestling and my comedy separate, because as a play-by-play guy, like, I know my role. I'm very traditional when it comes to play-by-play. I think the play-by-play dude should not be making it about himself. He needs to tell the story. He needs to drive the car, direct the traffic, kick to the color commentator, because they're the star of the team. So the last thing I want people is assuming, if they see comedian and play-by-play guy, I don't want them thinking, oh, this guy's just going to be a goof on a broadcast. Nah, trust me. I do not like most comedy in wrestling. I don't think it's done well. I don't think it's done subtly. I think it's way over the top and it doesn't work. For me, I take play-by-play so serious and I take comedy serious. So I rarely combine the two. But I finally got to the point where I gave myself a break. I was like, you know what? I've done enough to prove myself in broadcasting. I've done more than enough. And I've certainly done more than enough in stand-up. And when I got asked to do it, I said, you know what? Yeah, why not? And I did tell them, I said, look, if you need anything, ring announcing or play-by-play or whatever, I'm happy to jump in and do that. Keep me busy, because I don't drink. I'm not going to be partying. So it's just like, I got to do something on this ship besides my comedy shows. You know what I mean? So we'll see what happens, but I'm looking forward to it. I'm pretty sure it's already sold out or very close to sold out. So it's definitely an honor to do it. And I'm very exciting. And the cool thing is, like, I'll get to see some old friends. I'll get to make some new friends and it'll be great.
Absolutely. And to tell us a bit about your wrestling fandom then. I think you've probably touched on it during this conversation already, but what kind of pulled you in the very early days? And were there any kind of larger than life personalities that pulled you in and captivated you?
Man, I think it was, I started watching so young. I want to say I was like maybe 5 years old. How old were you when you first got into it?
Oh, quite late, actually. 16, but we're talking 30 plus years. So I really started getting into it. I tell a lie, probably more than that, because I used to watch World of Sport with my nan every Saturday afternoon. So probably about 35 years, I probably would have been in my teens already.
That's kind of, wow, growing up on World of Sport, that is such an awesome thing to start with, you know, because it's just, the style of it is so
100%
drastically different from the larger than life you know, presentation that we have today. I'm trying to remember what the first thing that I just remember seeing it on television and I was blown away by it. And then I found out that my old neighbor two doors down, like my youngest friend in life, we met, we were like 4 years old. We're still buddies to this day. I remember his stepdad found out that WWF was coming to the Allentown Fairgrounds to do a live show. And he's like, you remember one day he asked me, he goes, do you want to go? We're going to go see wrestling. I'm like, we can do that? Like, I didn't even like resonate in my brain. And so he took us to see WWF at the Allentown Fairgrounds. I believe, I could have swore it was when I was five, but maybe it was when I was six or seven, because I did find what I think was the correct flyer, because the main event was Junkyard Dog and Outlaw Ron Bass. So that was like my first live event, and Allentown Fairgrounds back then, it was nothing fancy. I mean, we're not talking about any, look, basic guardrails, curtain, no theatrics, nothing. But as a little kid, it was all we needed. And I was just roped in. And so at that point, anytime they would come to Stabler Arena near Lehigh University or the Allentown Fairgrounds or anything like that, I did my best to try to go there. And then, of course, we had what I called the cheater box when it came to cable, where there was a little box, there was a little black switch, a little red switch, and you hit the black switch, and guess what? You got all the pay channels you wanted. Well, yeah, my dad, brother, and I would watch every single pay-per-view as a kid. And those are some of my favorite memories, because pro wrestling was really the one thing that brought the three of us together. My dad and my brother had a lot of interests in common. They both love cars. My brother loves scouts. My dad loves scouts. None of that was of interest to me, but pro wrestling really brought us all together. So when we watched those pay-per-views together, I mean, just awesome, awesome memories. I mean, I remember some of the earliest memories would probably have to be obviously the Mega Powers, you know, coming together and then breaking apart.
With the handshake as well. How did they do that?
That was just amazing. And then Elizabeth getting involved, and just so many great memories. I was joking around with a friend the other day where I said, someone asked me, they said, well, what matches really stand out? And I think people are expecting like all these like classics. And I said, you know what really stands out? Big Boss Man and the Mountie in the jailhouse match.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable, because the Mountie does not get it. Jacques does not get enough credit for making that character work. And the best part about it.
One of my favorite characters ever.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. Thank you. It's unbelievable, because he sold it. Like, and the best part about that match wasn't when the match ended. It was how they kept going back to the jail for little segments. And he's losing his mind. And oh my God, you can't fingerprint me. I'm the Mountie. I'm like, this is the best thing ever.
SummerSlam 91, wasn't it?
Sure was.
If I remember rightly. Yeah, yes. Absolutely. Brilliant memories. Great memories. And was there always a desire, maybe kind of during your formative years, maybe as a teenager, to get into the wrestling business, or maybe to get into the announcing or show business, the entertainment business? Was there that early desire from yourself?
Actually, my parents remember this. Apparently, since I was 6 or 7 years old, the first, you know, when you're a little kid, you come up with what you're going to be when you get older. I guess the first thing I ever said is, I want to be a sports commentator. That was like the phrase I came up with. And because I was obsessed with wrestling, and I would watch the Phillies, and the Phillies had Harry Callis, who's a legendary broadcaster, Hall of Famer, no longer with us. It's ironic. He actually passed away only weeks after the Phillies won the World Series in 2008, which I think is just sad, but beautiful. He got to call the World Series victory, and then unfortunately he passed away. But I loved hearing the voices help tell the stories, whether it be baseball or basketball, like another guy, Mark Zumoff, who was the voice of the Sixers for over 20 years. I mean, he's a big inspiration. And so there's so many great voices. And I remember as a little kid, I guess that was the first thing I wanted to do. But as I got older, you know, I'm from a small town in Pennsylvania. Pipe dreams like that are not realistic. You know, I was raised by two blue collar nurses. My mom and dad met in nursing school. So for me, they were like, hey, you got to figure out what you want to do. And so I was like, well, I like people. I like sports. I'll just do physical therapy. And so I did. And I'm grateful for PT, because it really gave me a great knowledge base. I love helping people out when they get injured. I've lost count of how many wrestlers I've helped with injuries over the years. Because as you know, indie shows, they don't exactly have medical personnel. So
They're getting better. Over here in the UK, it's getting better, certainly.
I'm sure it is. In America, yeah. I don't know. We'll see. But I'd get done calling a show and people would be hurt. I'd help them out and stuff like that. So I'm grateful for PT. But the dream of actually working in wrestling, I just never thought it was a possibility. Until I started, you know, getting into hosting. And then I met a guy who was working with David Marquez. He told David about me. And David said, hey, I need someone to do interviews. I said, okay, let's do it. It's weird because like I was already doing stand-up and I was already doing hosting, but I could never figure out how the heck do I work my way into the wrestling aspect. Never thought that would be a possibility. And so I'd say I started a little bit later in life as far as working in the business, but my thought process is, and the broadcasting side of it, as long as you keep getting better and you stay camera ready, that's all you need.
And during your early career, and by early career, I mean pre-WWE, so probably a good 8, 9, 10 years before you joined WWE, do you have any personal highlights or favorite memories from that part of your career? And you essentially, what would be your journey towards the big time?
Oh, absolutely. Number one, the camaraderie. I will say this. I'm so grateful to wrestling because I've made closer friends in wrestling than I have in comedy. Keep in mind, I've been doing comedy for 16, 17 years. And people always ask me, like, what's the difference between wrestling and comedy. For me, because there are a lot of parallels. If you notice, a lot of comedians love wrestling and a lot of wrestlers love comedy. It's synonymous all the time. To me, the biggest difference is if you're going to be truly successful in wrestling, you have to know how to work with other people. You have to, or your success is going to be short-lived. If you're a comic, you could be the biggest, most selfish prick in the world, and you could still find success. Because as a comic, you are solo. And that's why I'm not shocked. I've gotten, with this special, I've gotten way more support from the wrestling and combat sports community than I have from comedians. Because comics are insecure. They don't want to promote anyone else's shit. They want to promote their own shit. Whereas wrestlers and combat sports people, they're like, oh man, this is awesome. This is one of our own, and he's putting out a special. Hell yeah, we're going to support it. And that's what I love about it. And so that's the biggest thing, is the camaraderie, making so many good friends over the years and just being able to do stuff. You mentioned the tour with Rikishi. I mean, getting to open for Mick Foley. I was part of a team that brought pro wrestling to Pakistan for the first time ever. And that was in 2017. And then I went back in 2018. And they're called Ring of Pakistan. Great group of people. And it was crazy doing that. Like, I wore every hat for them, every hat possible. I did it over there. And when we went over there, it's kind of hard for us to recognize, but people in Pakistan only knew WWE. They didn't even know that there was professional wrestling. They just knew WWE, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
They didn't know there was anything else. So for us to bring wrestlers, I think, like, I want to say 16 different countries were represented with the talent that came in. These fans, and we were doing thousands of people, you know, one was in an open arena, one was indoors, but thousands of people packed out. And it was unbelievable. Just the energy was nonstop. Like, they had never seen anything like it, because all they knew was watching WWE on television. They didn't know there was professional wrestling outside of WWE, right? And so being a part of that, I mean, oh my God, the memories are unbelievable. Like, just to be able to do that for 2 years in a row, stuff like that, you just don't forget. And then obviously I've been lucky enough to call a number of really cool matches over the years, whether it be for the United Wrestling Network or, you know, or any other company. So, but number one for me, it's the friendships, it's the camaraderie, it's the relationships, and just the experience. I mean, the pro wrestling, because of that, I'm going to visit our troops overseas. I mean, I've been to so many countries in the name of professional wrestling. The Ringside Salute Tour is the only tour of its kind. There's no other professional wrestling tour visiting our troops except us. And I'm very proud that I started that with Ken Anderson back in 2015, just because we both were active with Wounded Warrior Foundation at the time. And we wanted to give back. And Armed Forces Entertainment, I had a connection there. We made it happen. And the tour is so beloved that we're going to go back again next year. And we're going to hopefully be doing it for a long time coming. And that's really what means the most. When you see pro wrestling is so global, it's awesome.
It really is. I'm going to bring up some pictures of your time as a sports broadcaster, possibly a pre and post WWE. We'll talk about WWE very, very soon. But to all you mentioned about the camaraderie, some of the great people that you've met over the year and worked over the years and worked with, of course. And I'm sure some of these are bringing back some great memories. And of course, you mentioned Championship Wrestling, formerly Championship Wrestling from Hollywood. But then it all changed, didn't it? And NXT. Yep. There you are, the Black and Gold brand. And tell us again, give us a bit more of an insight into how that happened, how the opportunity came about. You grafted, you got your name out there. You know, you dedicated yourself as a broadcaster for so many years before getting the opportunity. How did you get onto WWE's radar?
Good question. I mean, I think it was really just relationships over the years. I don't know for a fact, but I'm fairly certain that people like Adam Pearce and Nigel McGuinness played huge parts in it. Cause Nigel and I have been friends for probably about a decade. And, you know, I'm so happy for his success. I mean, if anyone deserves it, it's Nigel. You want to talk about humble? Nigel's overly humble. So I am so glad when, not only when they first announced him for Ring of Honor, but now he does a lot of the big pay-per-views, as he should. He's so good as a color commentator. He is one of the absolute best in professional wrestling right now, if not the best. That's how great I think Nigel is. And Adam Pearce speaks for itself. I mean, you look at his career in the ring and now look at what he's doing now. I mean, everything he does is real. It's authentic. And that's why he's so awesome on camera. I really think it was two of them really just vouching for me. And because it's not very often when an opportunity comes up like that. There are very, very few broadcasting spots. And it just so happens they needed one. I guess they both were vouching for me. And I sent them all my materials. And sure enough, they didn't even audition me. They said, look, we don't feel there's a need to fly you across the country to audition when you've already proven yourself. And we have a lot of people who vouch for you.
Wow.
And it meant a lot because usually they would always audition people. And unfortunately, when the day happened, when those mass releases happened, I was flat out told we had high expectations for you and you exceeded every single one of those expectations. You know, this is not performance based. It's just the world has changed and the company has made a lot of really tough decisions. And I said, okay, we'll see what happens in the future. You know, gotta move on with my life and see what happens. But, so I think that's kind of how it happened. But once you get the opportunity, you got to make the most of it. There's a lot of people who have come and gone on the broadcasting side of things that didn't last very long for other reasons. So my thing was like, I'm a first in, last to leave kind of person. And that was my life. I was married to the job because that's what I wanted to do. You know, I was in the PC bright and early in the morning. I stayed as late as I could. I went to every skull session possible, did as much as I could to be just fully invested. And I think it really showed in my work. Cause I mean, they had me doing everything, interviews, live event hosting, ring announcing. And then finally it got a chance to get the chair on 205, which, you know, only lasted for about 3 months, but man, I was grateful for those 3 months. And that picture is me at Staples Center. That was Starrcade 2019 in Atlanta. And so for me, it's, you know, it's those times where when you think back, you're like, man, I had so much more to do. But at the same time, we can't control what happens in life and everything happens for a reason. So for me, I'm grateful for every second that I have. I have no regrets because I made the most of every single opportunity. And I'm grateful for it. It's almost like a dream where I think sometimes like I was there, right? Yeah, no, wait, I was.
Tell us about, because obviously going from the indies and announcing, you know, on anything other than WWE, it's a hell of a transition. And you hear about people having to kind of really adapt to the machine, you know, you're another cog in the machine now. WWE is a beast. Mm. Did it take you a little bit of adjustment? Was there much adjusting to do on your part?
I think the harder adjustment was just moving across the country and getting settled. Right. But as far as jumping right in, no, because I have no ego. It's like, look, if you're paying me, you tell me what to do and I'll do it. And also, it's funny because like a lot of wrestling fans, they want to complain about the WWE style of commentary, whatever that is. I hate to tell you, it works. I got 80% better as a broadcaster from my 1 year there, learning from people like Michael Cole, Tom Hannifin, Vic Joseph, Matthew Raywalt. You know what I mean? Like, I learned so much on when it comes to structure of a match and what to look for and, you know, always protect the baby face, admonish the heel, but do it as a play-by-play guy in the correct way. Like as a play-by-play guy, you shouldn't be calling anyone a scumbag. You shouldn't be calling anyone a piece of shit. That's not your job as a play-by-play guy. Let the audience decide that. Your job is to say what happens in front of you. You can admonish the heel. You can say something's wrong, but don't add your opinion into it. All that stuff makes a difference and it makes commentary better. So I learned so much more in that 1 year than I ever have. And the cool thing about it is I've taken the storytelling aspect of it. That's the number one thing, storytelling that, you know, really gets in your brain there.
Yeah.
I took all those skills and I brought it into the world of combat sports. Because in my opinion, I don't think MMA and boxing have enough storytelling. I don't think we learn enough about the fighters. So for me, I use the same exact plan in combat sports that I do in wrestling. I always ask the fighters ahead of time, is there anything you can tell me about yourself? Anything personal that I can get during your walkout that if you win the fight, I can circle back around and finish the story? And the fighters really appreciate it. And so for me, that I owe a lot to professional wrestling to be able to do that in the MMA world. So it wasn't really a hard transition. I was ready. I was so ready to go. It was an opportunity I never saw coming. And so I said to myself, you know what? I want to be here for 20 years. I'm going to make it work. And, you know, I did as long as I could.
Absolutely. And you mentioned that you're a man with many hats when you were with WWE, and like I say, moving at a pace as well, hosting at live events, doing interviews, ring announcing, and then you got the opportunity to sit behind the desk, didn't you? 205 Live. We've touched on it already, but some great shots here. And of course, good friends, the former Aiden English. Like I say, those must bring back some good memories for yourself in particular, especially with, is it Matthew, how do you pronounce his surname?
Raywalt?
Raywalt, yes.
Yes.
And like I say, you must have built up a good connection with Matthew and had some good fun. But 205 Live was, I think, a very much underrated show. I certainly kept up with it as much as I could. The action was red hot every single week. And to get the opportunity to call some of the talent that were involved in some of the matches that you witnessed must have been a thrill when, of course, you were living your WWE dream whilst doing it.
It was so surreal. And on top of it, my first ever broadcast was actually November of 2019. Tom was unable to call that night. So he said, hey, I'm going to have you call this one. Of all places, it's in Philadelphia. Same arena that I'm not kidding. The same arena that I went to the Royal Rumble 2004, the same arena that I would go watch the Sixers in. I mean, mind blowing that my first broadcast is in Philly, where I went to college. I went to college 15 minutes from that arena. It was completely insane. Like, I did my best to take in the moment. My only regret is that I didn't take more photos and videos because I wanted to be professional, which now I learned, screw that. I want to take photos and videos so I have memories. But just the walking down that ramp and sitting in that desk, and you sit in that chair and you just look around, you're like, oh my God, there's thousands of people here, and there's the Titantron. Oh, and there's the camera guy. Oh, this is really happening. It was crazy, and it never gets old. I mean, man, and obviously 205 had a lot of changes.
Yeah,
I preferred it when it was after SmackDown 45 minutes because the guys really got to work. You would always get at least 2 10-minute matches and then a solid 15 to 17 minute match, which you rarely ever got, you know, on say Raw or SmackDown. And so it was kind of like the wrestlers got to be creative. And I thought the roster 205 was awesome. It was always changing, but it was awesome. And I was so grateful to be able to call that and just, man, what a time. Like I said, it didn't last long. And only had a little over 3 months, but I definitely cherish every single broadcast. And every single time walking down that ramp and just looking around the arena. And a lot of people like to say, oh, well, people left after SmackDown. In my experience, the arenas were still 70 to 75% full, which we're still talking 10,000 people.
Yeah.
And never got old, man, sitting in that chair. And the people that work for that company, the production, the staff, the camera operators, they are so good at what they do. And they make you feel so comfortable. I speak the world of them. And being able to work with someone like Byron Saxton, I forgot to mention him, a pro's pro. And we got my final broadcast was actually with him. Obviously empty arena during the pandemic, but I'm glad I was at least able to get one broadcast in with him before everything changed. But truly grateful. The most surreal thing ever. When you're a little kid, I'm watching these two guys behind me on my wall and I'm like, technically I'm kind of at the same table right now. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Absolutely. And tell us a bit about Michael Cole, because I think he is in charge of the announcers and the commentators within WWE. Did you get a chance to work with him much, get much feedback from him? And second part of that question, do you know if there was any plans for you for the future? Obviously, you're making quick progression, covering a lot of ground in your short time there. Was there any talk of where they might like you to end up next?
He was incredible to work with. And no, he was very, very helpful. I got to sit next to him at Worlds Collide in 2020 in January when, you know, he was essentially producing it behind the scenes, and he had me sit next to him just to kind of take it all in and learn. And, you know, I would see him at SmackDown TV every week because, you know, obviously 205. And so anytime he needed me, I'm there. And so he was fantastic. And I'm glad that finally over the last year or so, the hardcore wrestling fans are finally taking to him and realizing like, okay, he's great.
100%. Yeah.
I mean, 26 years with the company. That's incredible. And so I learned a lot from him, and I speak the world of him. As far as the future, like I said, I'm a free agent. I'm freelancing. I'm open. I mean, I left, you know, on great terms.
Yeah.
I loved working with everybody there. Obviously the company's always changing, so you truly never know. But at the same time, you know, whoever is interested, I'm open to talk, because I know that any company that brings me on, and this is not me, you know, I think humility is important, but I think I'm at the point in my life where being honest is more important. Any company that brings me on is better because of it, because there isn't anything I can't do with a microphone to the highest level possible for professional wrestling or combat sports. And so I don't know. We'll see what happens. I mean, you never say never, right? Who knows?
Absolutely. Yeah, 100%. And a bit of a loaded question, and I think you covered it a little bit. Do you still have goals, desires, dreams within the combat sports, sport broadcasting, wrestling, play-by-play, things you'd like to achieve that you haven't done so already?
Sure. I mean, in the MMA world, I just want to do more. Yeah. Like I'm honored to be working for Titan FC. Like, I mean, I love being part of their family. Lex McMahon is the CEO. He's such an amazing person. And on top of that, he does so much for veterans out there. And the way he runs Titan FC is so professional. And, you know, we have a pay-per-view coming up this Friday in Miami, Titan FC 84. If you watch UFC Fight Pass, check it out. But at the same time, I would love to do more. I would love to have an opportunity with UFC. Obviously I'm, you know, Titan is affiliated with Fight Pass, but for me, every experience I get, it's going to make me that much better. So I would love to have some kind of opportunity with the UFC in some capacity, you know. I don't know how, but I'd be open to that. And as far as professional wrestling, I still have yet to work an event in the UK. I think that'd be great at some point. But I think at this point in my life, I've learned, I think as we get older, I think you can relate to this too. The older you get, the more you are so grateful for every opportunity, because you don't know if it's going to happen again. You know, when you're in your 20s, even in your 30s, you're like, you're just living it. You're like, yeah, this is cool, whatever. It's like, no, like once you get to a certain point in your life, you savor it. You let everything kind of seep in. Like, this is a cool opportunity. I don't know if it's going to happen again. So for me with wrestling, I've been fortunate enough to do as much as I've done. Every new opportunity, I am stoked, because you don't know if it's going to all get taken away in an instant, you know, and that happened to me. And at the same time, like, I love working in wrestling, but at the same time, I'm only going to work in wrestling if it makes sense. You know, I have a family now. I'm not just going to take wrestling gigs to take wrestling gigs. They have to make financial sense. They have to make professional sense. And so as much as I want to work in wrestling, I'm only very selective with the companies that I do work for. So
yeah, absolutely. Johnny, we're going to ask you for your socials very, very soon, but just a quick plug for my next live interview.
Yeah.
And it's this guy here, Shah Samuels, will be coming onto the Wrestling with Jonas podcast in just 2 days' time, Wednesday, the 11th of October, 8 p.m. UK time, 20-year pro, former WWE NXT UK star, former Rev Pro, British undisputed cruiserweight champion as well. And this guy is a pro through and through. You're not going to want to miss my next live interview with Shah Samuels in just 2 days' time. But Johnny, it's been awesome speaking to you for a little over an hour. But before we say goodbye, where can my viewers, fans, listeners reach out to if they want to learn more about Johnny Loquasto, more about your content, more about Saudi Stepdad? Where can they do so, my friend?
Real simple, at Jay Quasto and all the socials, JQUASTO. YouTube.com/JohnnyLoquasto is where you can actually find Saudi Stepdad, the special, along with, you know, other videos that I have there. And that's really it. I keep the socials pretty simple. I keep them straightforward all the way through. And I appreciate anyone who's watched it. I hope it's been entertaining enough for you, especially, you know, you probably don't have too many people on the broadcasting side of things. And so I try to be as interesting as possible. So hopefully people enjoyed it.
Yeah, there we go. But Johnny Loquasto, you've been an awesome guest for episode 323. I wish you nothing but the best. Would love to see you over here in the UK. I hope Saudi Stepdad goes from strength to strength. But thank you for being an awesome guest, my friend.
No, thank you so much, man. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.